This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack.
And Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, we dive into all things Apple, including a purple iPhone.
Plus, we tell you what we're hearing about Facebook entering into the world of Clubhouse.
Also on the show, how NASA plans to put humans back on the surface of the moon.
And we tell you how to hire and fire your kids with daily chores that they might actually want to do.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
Trending up.
I'm excited for the show today because I might be able to learn to be an adult. Apart from that, Amber, what have you learned actually in the last week that's positive and uplifting for people?
Well, I think that I have learned that at least here in Ontario, where we are taping the show, in the past few days, things have been getting a little bit better in terms of the number of people getting vaccinated. So that's hopeful, I think. We're making some good strides in that area. And at the same time, we're having a bit of a snowstorm. So
those two things
are not equal. They're not equal, just so you know, but they are both true. Nonetheless, also, we just had a huge Apple event take place this week. My brother actually did a great blog post over at ambermack.com. A bunch of new things that they've added, Apple Podcasts subscriptions. So this is very cool in the sense that these subscriptions could potentially allow people to have additional content, but also be able to really figure out a way to monetize their podcasts. And of course, Michael, we mentioned, because you have to, the purple iPhone 12.
Yeah, so everyone's fascinated and wonder every year how they're going to iterate on products. Are they going to introduce new products? What kind of features? But it's interesting. They went for color, and that's what people are talking about. So it is quite fascinating how you can iterate so much on a single product, if that makes sense, and still be relevant. Because, I mean, you know, this is many years and many iterations later. So I think that's a pretty huge accomplishment just there with the iPhone.
Yeah, I do. I think that it is a huge accomplishment. And they had many other announcements as well, we should say, that next generation version of the Apple TV 4K. So that's a big one. New iMac with the M1 processor. That's also a big one. iPad Pro with the M1 processor and XDR display. If this is all gibberish to you, basically it feels like they've had a new release of almost all of their headline products, so to speak.
Yeah, 100%. And also like the AirTags are finally here and all kinds of stuff. So like tons and tons out there. Of course, if you want a really good overview, as Amber mentioned, head on over to ambermack.com and check out the blog post there. Facebook, of course, it wouldn't be a week without Facebook doing something. They've announced they will roll out a series of audio features. Now, this is including all kinds of stuff that seems to be competing against the slew of other audio companies and products that have been launched in recent months. There, one is live audio rooms and sound bites. So, of course, this looks like it's trying to compete with the likes of Clubhouse and various other audio products and companies out there. It's interesting. We'll see. You know how much traction these products get. I mean, I don't know if it's a little too late, or you know, I don't know whether you need to be first to market. Although having said that, sorry, I just remembered Meerkat when it got released, and Periscope, and all these ones, and which ones you know worked and which ones didn't, and you know, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think at the end of the day, I think what's really fascinating about this is that, and we've had this conversation before, it's this conversation around the fact that we have to ask ourselves the question, is Clubhouse a potential feature for some of these platforms, or is it its own entire social network? And I feel, technically speaking, it is definitely, yeah, it's definitely a feature. I mean, it's not that complex, right? You know, it's really like having a conference call over the internet. It's audio only, which is relatively lightweight. So to me, it feels like there is an opportunity to improve upon this feature in Clubhouse as well as Twitter Spaces. I've always found it to be very basic, which I think is maybe why a lot of people like it. But there is the potential to add more things, like add links for articles of discussions, ways that people can message people. That's the only way it really becomes its own platform. And so I think it's kind of limited right now. And I think we're going to see a lot of people who are really just copying what Clubhouse has done.
Yeah, and I think that's, you've hit it right on the nose, because again, we've seen this with sound bites, for example. That's the audio clips that are short form, just like TikTok videos, but instead of for audio focused with captions. So Facebook seems to be going down the path of introducing features as a part of their holistic bigger platform. Maybe they just need to amalgamate these things. And as you said, stuff like Clubhouse could be absorbed into these greater, bigger behemoth platforms, and they just start to offer these different features.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so the last story we're going to talk about is a fun one, Michael. I probably should just let you lead on this because I know you'll be very excited. It is possible that humans may go back to the moon.
Well, it's fascinating because, and I just nerd out on this, and it's just so interesting to me that, you know, obviously NASA used to be kind of the in the pilot seat, I guess, sorry for the pun, you know, driving and leading, you know, people going to space. And now they're doing these partnerships with the likes of SpaceX, you know, but SpaceX just won this contract. And it's an ridiculous amount of money. It's like $2.89 billion to help commercialize commercial human lander. The goal is to put, like, you know, everyday people on the surface of the moon. We've talked about whether we should or shouldn't be many times on the show, but I just find it fascinating. This, you know, the possibilities and the positiveness that surrounds space, and you know, developing and exploring space. But you know, it's fascinating to me. That's all I have to say. I'm sure there are a lot of other people out there as well. But the only thing I struggle with is this, you know, SpaceX, I guess. I wonder why they can't be paying for it themselves. Well, that sounds a little controversial.
It's okay that you think out loud.
I did. I was like, I thought that out loud, but I was like, I don't know, because I thought the problem was NASA couldn't really afford it, and they, and, you know, it's government funded and all this stuff. It's really expensive to go to space. If you're a private company, isn't that the whole point? You raise all this money. I don't know. I was like,
well, yeah. Anyway. I mean, if you look at the Mashable article, you can see pretty clearly that the space agency announced that it awarded the private rocket company a $2.8 billion contract. So, there is the price tag. But interesting. We'll keep an eye on this. And it's always fascinating to see what happens on the space front.
We certainly will. And of course, stay with us. We've got so much more ahead. We're going to learn how to be an adult, how to manage your kids at home to make sure that they're doing all the right things. We share how to simplify adulthood on the other side of the break with a few easy steps.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Techstar.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now, imagine if there was some way to simplify adulthood. Well, Real World is doing just that with step-by-step playbooks to help you with everything from budgeting to moving to salary negotiation, all kinds of stuff. Genevieve Ryan Belair is the driving force behind the company and is joining us now. Genevieve, this seems so simple. I wish I had had this to help me learn to be an adult. So how did this idea come about for you?
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me, Michael. And it's so great to be here and share more about what we're building. So, I mean, the problem really was that I experienced exactly what you just said. You know, I wish I had something when I was younger to help me navigate these questions that everyone has to handle when they're starting out in the real world. I had sort of a very blessed and sort of wonderful education experience when I was younger. After graduating from college, I went straight into law school to become a lawyer. And so I spent a lot of extra time in graduate school before I actually started my first job. And so that meant that by the time I was filling out that health insurance paperwork, 401ks, you know, all of the sort of life things, I was a little bit older and realized pretty quickly that despite being very lucky with having an amazing education, I just never learned any of these real world topics, you know, the personal finance questions around credit and debt and taxes and the like, more of the healthcare stuff, you know, finding an apartment in a place like New York City where I live. And it was just a really frustrating experience. And I'm the oldest kid in my family. So I didn't have an older brother or sister who was, you know, shepherding me along and sort of helping me understand how to set up the accounts or fill out the paperwork. And I just made a lot of really silly mistakes that a platform like Real World hopefully can help others not do in the future.
It is a little bit disappointing that individuals don't learn more about existing and thriving in the real world while they're in school, and they have to wait till many of them kind of screw up along the way. So can you talk a little bit about the actual practical part of what you're offering? What is it like for an individual who signs up and accesses one of your many, many playbooks?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. We've spent a lot of time really understanding this space because, as you said, you know, it seems so simple. It seems like something that should be taught in school or, you know, at your first job when you're starting out, just to make sure you understand the systems in which you're operating. But it's just something that's not covered. And so the first thing that we decided to do when we were building this product was really just almost define what those different topics were, provide almost like a syllabus for adulthood, kind of say, here are the different categories and questions that you're likely going to experience. And then while that we've told you what those things are, let's help you actually figure out how to tackle them effectively. So the playbooks incorporate everything from, you know, a 2 to 3 minute long animated educational video that gives you a high level overview of the topic, you know, what the vocabulary is, how the things typically work, any relevant benchmarks, and then actually goes through step by step, how do you do that thing? So whether that's filling out a piece of paperwork, whether that's getting your first credit card and going through that process and making the decision that makes the most sense to you. And what we've tried to really do is make the experience feel as customized as possible. So as you go through those different playbooks and answer different questions, you get down different paths so that you're finding an experience that's really relevant and sort of serving your needs individually. And so it's a kind of a mixture of education and action in that way.
So I guess my question is, who specifically puts these courses together? Because there are some adults out there that I wouldn't trust.
So it's actually all built by our team. So we have spent the last couple of years becoming subject matter experts in this space, doing the research, partnering with dozens of colleges across the country to really understand this landscape. And, you know, my background's in finance and in law. And so a lot of these questions are actually in that realm in terms of just a subject matter. And so we were able to take an interesting and I think kind of high touch lens to building each of these different flows out. So it's all built in house. We do rely on subject matter experts for areas we need a little bit more information and are starting to build partnerships with institutions that have that expertise around other life moments. So not just helping you start out in your first job or, you know, navigate your early 20s, but things like buying your first house or, you know, getting married or having your first child or sort of all of these different questions throughout adulthood that we can help support.
How do you think things have changed during the pandemic in terms of people adulting? Because we've had to face some harsh realities of the times. Do you think that has actually made things better in terms of young adults and how they're able to deal with what's in front of them?
Yeah, I mean, the pandemic has been, you know, wild, obviously, and I think a really challenging time for everyone, but particularly for people who are just starting out after school and starting to, you know, start their first job maybe remotely so they don't have the benefit of having someone sitting next to them, helping them through that paperwork, understanding what they need to do. But, you know, also all of the systems in which we operate, the healthcare-oriented systems, financial systems, just, you know, career landscape have all really been in flux over the last year. And so I think it's been a time of increased uncertainty. And so for people who are starting to navigate these different questions, there's just a lot more anxiety around how to do so. So what we've seen, at least, is that there's actually been a lot more interest in kind of getting your life together, so to speak, and understanding everything from your own finances to, you know, how you can protect yourself from a healthcare perspective. But I think the attention to that space has only really increased over the last year.
What is the one thing you wished you had been told or given a heads up on before you became an adult? Because I can give you a list for me.
I can probably give you a list too, frankly, but I think the biggest thing that people don't really think about is starting to save for retirement as early as possible. And, you know,
that was the most grown-up thing I've ever heard in so many months. And in fairness, you are absolutely true. So it is a good advice, but that's super grown-up.
Yeah, I mean, I could say, you know, get a budget, you know, make sure you have health insurance, all of those things. But I think one of the things you don't really realize until it's too late is that if you start saving for retirement as early as possible, so right as you start making money as you leave school, you have all of these amazing factors sort of working in your favor, like compounding interest, helping you grow that sort of money over time. And it's something that I didn't do until I was a little bit older, because I was starting my job a little bit later because I was in grad school for so long. And so I think that's one of the first things I say for anybody who has earned income: start saving for retirement. You know, you can get time working to your advantage. But just at the most basic level, just making sure you have a budget, understanding what's coming in, what's going out, so that you can kind of stay on top of all of those things too.
One last question for you. What have you heard so far from people who are using the real world playbooks? How has it impacted their lives?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's sort of two, this product is really something for everyone, but there's really one cohort that I think we've been able to serve most effectively. And that's people who maybe are the first person in their family to go to college or to work in an environment where they maybe have health insurance and retirement savings and all sorts of benefits from their employers, who just might not necessarily have someone at home who can actually give them a heads up as to what those decisions are. And so what we've heard from them, and really from everyone more generally, is that it's just so nice to have everything in one place, you know. And that's really our mindset and what we're building, is this idea of a one-stop shop for adulthood. You don't have to do the research on Google or find so many different, you know, information sources to get an answer, go down these rabbit holes. Really just having one centralized platform and ultimately community to make those different decisions. And so that's been far and away the thing that people have been most excited about of what we've been building.
Okay, so just to wrap up for people who are listening right now, and I'm sure they will all love this idea, where is the best place for them to go in terms of getting started?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we're mostly on web as opposed to mobile, although we'll be releasing a mobile app in the next couple of weeks, which you'll be able to find in the Apple Store. But if you go to just realworldplaybook.com, you can start for free and sign up and create your account and get access to about 100 different playbooks across all these different categories. And if you're just in the mood for more adulting humor and sort of a relatable Instagram that can kind of talk about all these different questions, you can find us at realworld.co on Instagram.
Awesome. Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us. And thanks for all that you're doing to help young adults and maybe just everyday adults get used to
thanks,
what's in front of them. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Amber. Thanks, Michael.
Up next, we have apps to help you link with audio and a whole lot more.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Apptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's time now to take a look at some new and trending apps. And Michael is in a learning phase of his life, and all of these apps are all about learning. So first up, we have a site that I think many people have probably heard of before. It's also an app for Android as well as iOS devices. And Michael, it is called Skillshare.
Yes, and I have to say, you are never too old to learn. That's what I have learned during the pandemic. So I was going down this rabbit hole, and there were so many really great tools out there, and I just thought these were some really good ones to mention. This first one, as you said, was Skillshare. So as you said, it's on both platforms. It does have a free trial. So and a lot of these types of apps do, where you're learning or doing courses or you know, getting information from experts. And then of course you can pay for a premium subscription. I just think it's like really neat the way this one goes about discovering the projects or discovering, you know, other creators on this platform, and how it can help, you know, with you learning and exploring just the creativity side of things. So this is specifically more for people that are creatively inclined and looking for skills or advice to help them with their creativity skills, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you were to look through all of the things that they offer, what would you do, Michael, in terms of different things you would want to learn?
Well, I know that, and I think this is very boring, because obviously it would be super helpful for, like, I guess a job my job. I did that in inverted quotes. I know that doesn't really work on audio, but Photoshop, I think that that would be very helpful just because, in the past, I've spent a lot of money on hiring designers and other people that are exceptionally creative to just turn simple things. So I think that it would be a really neat thing that I should do or use is to kind of learn Photoshop. And that just helps with any storytelling or any posts that I do on any of the interviews we've done. I think that would be a really good skill set for me to learn.
Absolutely. I don't want to say people have had more time to learn these days because I recognize that it's overwhelming, especially if you have kids in virtual school and all of that. But,
if you're just not a good adult like me, and now I now need to learn how to be a better adult. Let's be fair.
That is true. And I will say along those lines, though, I think people definitely have more time at home and maybe less time commuting. So there is that opportunity to learn. Now, this is cool because I think a lot of people love to learn by audio, myself included. I love podcasts and radio shows like this one. And these are 10-minute daily audio lessons from a company called Knowable. And this is really cool because audio is so simple in many ways, right? You can be listening to audio while you're doing the dishes or walking the dog. So I love this idea that people are thinking more seriously about audio as an educational tool.
So you've been saying this for years to me, and I was like, man, I want to listen to audio. Oh, that seems so silly. And I recently have started to do it. And I found a couple of podcasts that are knowledge-based and expert-led. And you're 100% correct. So when I'm cleaning my apartment or, when I need to go for a walk and exercise to get out, like in the only hour we're allowed in lockdown and stay at home orders. But it does help. And I found it much better than just listening to music or doing something that, isn't that important or just kind of passing the time. So what I love about this is that, they've curated trusted experts from around the world who are leading these courses. And it is much easier from an audio perspective. I do remember when I was in school, sometimes, and this was my dad's idea, he would record stuff and then I would listen to it at night to help me study. And sometimes I would fall asleep, I don't know, and it worked like a charm. And so now I'm starting to remember all these things. So this is a great one, Knowable, and it's got a massive library of all kinds of courses that you can, sift through to find one that works for you that you want to learn from.
Yeah, absolutely. And they have experts listed like Scott Kelly, who is a well-known astronaut. They have Alexis Ohanian, who is a well-known tech entrepreneur. So it's pretty incredible to see the very long list of people that they list that are doing these really short courses on Knowable. So highly recommend that. The next one we want to talk about is called Blinkist. And, I've heard of this one, but I've never actually used it. So the idea is that it actually brings together, as they describe in their site, knowledge from top nonfiction and podcasts. So again, you can learn anytime, anywhere. And this is pretty awesome as well. You can try it free for 7 days, which I think is also very cool.
Yeah. And again, it's just all different perspectives. It's being curated for you, which I think is great. So if you go to a reputable one, check out the reviews, you're getting something good from a trusted source. And I mean, this one specifically, there's over 4,500 best-selling nonfiction books and podcasts. And they cover all kinds of subjects and topics like leadership and history and psychology and so much more. So, and actually, I think this one, again, it's fascinating. I know, Amber, you guys have done some stuff, I think, with Malcolm Gladwell in regards to the monk debates. And so it's like the caliber, I think the point here, the caliber is exceptionally high from just global experts and leaders and just thought-provoking content.
It is kind of interesting to me, Michael, just thinking about these three apps, that we are in an age of an abundance of information, right? You can kind of Google anything. And yet, even though we're kind of drowning in all of this information, we're still striving to learn from people who have expertise. And I just feel like that speaks well for the fact that there are a lot of people who have deep knowledge, and it's worth learning from those people because you trust them versus simply doing a quick Google search.
Well, it definitely gives you hope, I think, for the future, because as you said, there's still this thirst for expert knowledge. I think the only thing out of all of these three apps, if I was going to have a negative, was time. And I think that's what came upon me when I was going through this. It's, we just don't have enough time. So it's allocating your time as smartly as possible to get the best day for you out of it. So that's why I loved, you know, we've got some bite-sized 10-minute pieces. If you've only got 10 minutes, just stuff to help you be better and learn and you know, listen to other perspectives.
Well, speaking of time, we got to wrap this one up.
Oh, we certainly do. Now, of course, if you've got any apps you think we should know about and share with our listeners, you can tweet us at Amber Mack and at AmBancroft80. And of course, use the hashtag The Feed. Coming up, how to hire and fire your kids at home.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Techstar.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. How would you go about reducing family friction? Well, something I'm sure lots of families would need help with during lockdowns and the pandemic especially. Hire and Fire Your Kids is an app helping manage behaviors and chores at home, complete with rewards and consequences. Jody Swain is the founder of Hire and Fire Your Kids and is joining us now. Jody, please tell me there was a horrific incident where you had to give consequences to your kids and that's how this came about, because that would be a great story to start with.
That's pretty much what happened, Michael. Good morning. I worked retail for years and years and we're a blended family, and I found myself at home on mat leave with this new baby and these kids and husband, honestly, that were driving me crazy. So I literally just took what I knew at work, which was, you know, motivating through, you know, recognition, reward and consequence. And lo and behold, it worked just as beautifully in the home environment. So that's how it kind of began, was in my home on a fridge with hiring them for jobs around the house and potentially firing them if they were caught one too many times not following our house rules. So yeah, that's how it began.
I think this is especially important during the pandemic with kids doing virtual school. And I would also argue that kids need and like structure for the most part. You know, I don't know if they love doing chores, but they love this idea that they have jobs and they can earn from these jobs. So how much more important do you think this has become over the past few months?
I think huge. And when we moved the app from a paid to a free, when COVID actually hit, you know, the users climbed dramatically. And I think it's because everyone's on top of one another. And, you know, we're sort of stuck in our own little bubble and, you know, the kids are there too. So to be able to have clear expectations set amongst, you know, not only mom and dad, but get the kids involved in that too. You know, they feel like they're part of this team, and together you're working in this environment where there's clear expectations, there's clear consequences, and there's recognition reward along the way too. So very fitting for the times we're in today.
What kind of insights have you been able to learn from the app to date in regards to something, say, like when is the best time during your child's development to introduce responsibility? Because I imagine this kind of these kinds of activities, you know, can either go really, really well or really, really wrong, depending on how old they are and the makeup of the family.
Yeah. And I think it depends on each family. And they say, you know, you should start teaching your kids, you know, responsibilities at a young age, but with Hire and Fire specifically, like the name itself is a little controversial. You know, you're going to fire your kids, but it's all done in fun. But really 7 to 12 is where we started with these kids, because they're the gung-ho. They're the ones that want to be the employee of the month every month. But as the pandemic hit, we actually noticed that the age got older and we have a lot of teens that are playing, preteen and teens. And I think the reason they like it is that, you know, we kind of become the buffer between parent and child. And, you know, we're the ones kind of doing the reminding and nagging versus mom or dad, which both parents and kids like at this point.
I would love it if you could talk a little bit more about gamifying the experience, because let's be honest, you know, this is the video game generation and they're used to this idea that they're being rewarded within these digital environments. So how much of that behavior are you able to understand and leverage to build into the app?
Yeah. So the gamification happens more, I would say, with the X, which is the consequence side of it. So as a family, you'd set these expectations, you'd sit down and go through, you know, we turn a light off when we leave a room, we flush the toilet after we use it, we don't hit our little brother. And so when you happen to catch them doing that, and it's sort of interesting because, you know, a lot of people, you know, it's positive recognition, but we found with these kids, because they are a little bit older, they actually, you know, prefer that. So if you catch them and go, oh, I see you forgot to make your bed today, you're going to get an X. And so that's where the gamification comes. And for the parents, which what's interesting is that the parents aren't the ones assigning the jobs. It's really they're going through deciding, you know, here's everything I'm actually prepared to reward my kids for. Some not. It's part of being a part of our family. And it's the kids that get to go in and apply for these jobs. So that, I think, is the piece the kids really like, is that they're not being told what to do. And the fact that, you know, the gamification is, oh, I don't want to get caught, you know, leaving my shoes at the door, or throwing my backpack on the ground because I don't want to get this X, this magic X that's sort of out there. So that's kind of where the gamification plays with the parents and kids.
Okay, so let's get to the most important question. How does getting an X and what kind of genuine consequences are there? Because I imagine when I was a kid, I did not enjoy getting into trouble, but ours were really severe. So I wonder today, and how parents go about parenting, how do you deal with consequences? What kinds of consequences work? Because obviously, I imagine it's more than just giving them an X.
Yes. So, yeah. So there's game rules with Hire and Fire. And as a family, we strongly recommend your team meetings, your family team meetings. And that's where you go through, because every family is different. And so some families, it could be three X's and you get fired. Some families, it could be 10 X's and you get fired. And the consequences we encourage to be set with the kids and the parents at their team meeting. So they know, okay, guys, this week we're working on this. You need to focus on this. Very similar to a team environment. And the kids are the ones coming up with the consequences. And so they know, oh my gosh, you know, it's Friday's payday, Thursday, I've already got three X's, one more and I'm fired. And they really do. What we're finding is these kids are really starting to manage their own behaviors. And it's, I think, the daily accountability and the daily measurement of these X's, whether they get the X's, and they can be removed too. So if the kid, you know, if it is make your bed, for example, and you give the kid an X for not making their bed, they can go and make it and the X gets removed, which again is reducing family friction. But yeah, it depends on the family. We don't really give the recommendations for the consequences. It's up to each individual family.
I bet you there are a lot of parents out there that would like to give their, like, one of the parenting, the other parents' actual consequences and the same thing as well. Because I'm sure it's not just kids that need
no.
a little coach.
No,
there's
mean,
a lot of spouses
husband,
out there that are like, huh, you know.
We actually have a lot of roommates that play. Because again, it's just, again, setting the clear expectations and measuring it on a daily basis. And it drives the awareness around that. But my husband and I both play. So we're kid mom and kid dad. So, but my husband, oh my gosh, still like socks. Like, I don't know what's with like socks when they come in the door, they just throw these socks on the floor. So yeah, that's one we're still working on with my husband.
Listen, you don't even have to tell me that because last night my husband took off his gym clothes and put them in front of the washing machine, which was ready to go. And I said, put them in the washing machine because it's ready to wash. And
so turn it on.
Oh, no, he didn't. He put them in the washing machine and he walked away. And I said, what are you doing? And he said, I put them in the washing machine. And I said, well, you should probably turn it on. He's like, is it ready? I'm like, it's always ready. It's always ready to be washed. So last question from you in terms of the business. I see on your site that you've had a lot of recognition for what you've been able to build. You've been on Dragon's Den. If people don't know what that is, it's kind of like Canada's Shark Tank. So talk to us just about the business. What is it like continuing to grow a business in a time like this?
Yeah, it's been pretty crazy. Last year, I consider a bit of a write-off, 2020. But no, this new year, we've been involved with an accelerator in the town of Whitby, which we're from, and we're actually getting set to start pitching to investors. So the monetization model, because we moved it to free last year, has been put on hold. So we haven't been generating any revenue. And we should be launching the model in the next coming weeks, actually. So the kids will be able to redeem their kids' cash earnings towards gift cards of their choice, obviously with parental approval. But it's been slow and steady, organic growth. But yeah, I mean, the users have been fantastic. And we still today, I think, have been so successful in growing with making sure we're getting the feedback from parents and kids. And any of the versions you see updated have been based purely on the feedback from our Hire and Fire families.
Well, definitely a great tool, I'm sure, for many families that are listening. Jody, thank you so much for joining us. And for those people that want to check it out, head on over to hireandfireyourkids.com. Jody, thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Up next, it's time to dive into the Global Emoji Report with one of the world's top experts.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. In the spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. The recently released Global Emoji Diversity and Inclusion Report that surveyed 7,000 frequent emoji users from seven countries found that 83% of global emoji users want the popular digital icons to strive for more inclusive representation. To talk more about this, we are joined by Paul D. Hunt, who is a typeface designer and font developer at Adobe in Australia. Okay, Paul, tell us more about this.
Sure. Well, it's been kind of a crazy year the past year, and we did this a while back, and we wanted to see how emoji usage has changed since we did it. I think it was about 2 years ago. Since we are just coming out of a pandemic year, one of the frequently used emojis that rose to the top was the relieved but still frightened emoji. So I think reflecting the feelings that the mixed emotions that we've had the past year of the ups and downs of making it through it and having a sense of relief.
Why is it so important to reflect inclusivity when it comes to emojis? Because obviously emojis have now become quite mainstream in regards to communication. Why is it important, and what kind of impact does this type of communication have on people?
Sure. I think that we need to always strive to make sure that our technology is making it possible for everyone to be included. For myself as a queer person, I advocated for gender inclusive representation in emoji, and that was rolled out last year. And I think that emoji is one of these things. It's an emerging communication tool. And what do people like to talk about? We like to talk about ourselves quite a bit. So if we're going to be using emoji to talk about ourselves, we generally want it to have the kind of concepts and representations in that system for us to be able to use it to talk about things that we care about.
Perhaps you can describe some of these emojis that have more inclusive representation. Just a few examples that are top of mind for you right now.
Well, I think there's always a few more. A couple years back, there was a woman in a hijab emoji that made it into the set. Also, at the same time, there was a man with a beard. So you see, it's kind of like the full spectrum of very masculine, manly representations, but at the same time, having representations of specific cultures of their ways of showing their femininity and kind of everything in between.
It must be difficult, though, when you are creating this type of communication and these icons to be able to be used by so many people in so many countries. So how do you go about ensuring, as we're talking about and discussing, being inclusive, but also, I mean, you know, there's only so many you can release and so many you can do at a certain time, right?
Yeah, it's been a couple of years since I've been super active with the Unicode Emoji Subcommittee, which is the body that vets all of the proposals and decides what to add each year. But I know that they're always looking at things that they think will be well loved and well used. But at the same time, also looking at important images and concepts from cultures besides just the United States and Europe. So I think it's just something to be mindful of. And I think that they are trying to do that. And I'm always pleased when I see the latest rollout to see how they are addressing the issues of making the emoji set more representative of more people around the world.
One last question for you. I have had a chance to look at your Twitter profile as well as your Instagram profile, and I know you are an advocate for emojis. What do you think emojis say about us as humans? Because I know sometimes when you look at your frequently used emojis, you can probably read a lot into that. What do you think?
Well, I think that people like imagery. I myself find it easier to just scan quickly something if it has a logo or an icon. For example, I'm just staring at my Spotify app right now, and I see that on all of my playlists, I've put some emoji in there to give me an idea of what's inside that playlist. So, you know, the old adage is that a picture is worth a thousand words. And I think that emoji and the emotional nature that they attempt to convey is something that has really connected with people, especially, again, as we've been kind of isolated from each other the past year, adding a little bit of splash of color and a little bit of joy to our online messaging is, I think, usually very welcome.
Well, listen, I just wanted to thank you so much for joining us today to talk more about this diversity and inclusion report. We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Up next, how workplace stress can change your personality.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Socially Speaking.
It's time now for Socially Speaking, and this week we're going to talk about work stress. So, guys, I have to tell you, I've been speaking a lot about the future of work, and I've been devastated to read all of the data around remote work, how people are working longer hours, how people are suffering from back pain, how there's been an increase in the number of people who are suffering from anxiety. And most recently, according to this Mashable article, they're saying that your workplace could also make you a worse person and totally change your personality. So this is disturbing. And I think it just shows us the importance of leadership. Now, without throwing anyone under the bus, Michael, maybe I'll start with you. How do you think people are faring right now in this world of remote work or in-person work with all of these additional layers of stress on them?
Well, I think most people aren't doing as well as they are leading people to believe. And I think that's one of the key issues to start with. People aren't acknowledging or recognizing the difficulties, because I think in the beginning, I was like, oh, that's great. This is easier. And I get this, and this from a benefit from being at home. But they didn't really think it out. And they didn't really think future forward, if you will. And so there's not really any parameters. We've heard and discussed this everywhere. It's like there's no real set schedules. Things blur into longer hours. You know, suddenly tasks that should be simple or not take very long is taking twice, three times as long. If you then add in kids and managing and looking after them and their schools and then spouses and all this. Anyway, it gets very messy. What I find interesting about this finding, and this goes back to, and I'm sure, I don't know if you guys have had this before, but I remember in my early days of starting out in the world, getting jobs and working for companies, some companies would make you do this Myers-Briggs evaluation for your personality test. And they then believed that you only had a set personality and it couldn't change. And what I found fascinating was I never believed that, because I've always worked in media. I've talked to a lot of people that are different. I believe that you're impacted by the people around you, and slowly that can eat away or change your personality and the way you interact and are as a person, personally and professionally. And so I think that that is what this is kind of getting at. It's like, if you have extra stress, if things change at work, these all have impacts and can, without you realizing, change your personality and how you interact in other circumstances and in other ways. And I just think that is fascinating, that you need to be careful of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Aaron, and you know, you don't have to talk about your current situation, but just thinking about the evolution of some of the work that you've done, how much stress can a bad work environment, do you think, add to your life? And when is it time to get out of that situation?
It's a tough one. When is it time to get out of that situation? Yeah, a bad work environment can add a
lot
of stress.
When you find another paycheck.
Yeah, exactly. Same paycheck, better paycheck, same benefits, who knows? I mean, the stressful work environment, when we were in an office, if something stressful happened or had an encounter with a coworker that was constantly stressing you or was always in conflict, but you had no choice because you worked together, in the office, you could just walk away. You turn your back on the office and you walk away literally and figuratively and then walk home. But when you're at home, there's nowhere to go. When you need a break from work, because your workspace is your home space. And I keep saying to people this phrase I heard, we're no longer working from home, we're living at work. And I don't know. Yeah, it's the truth. And there's additional stressors and bandwidth and internet and quiet spaces for Zoom meetings and multiple Zoom meetings. I feel that work from home has been underrated. It was under forecast, whatever you want to say. And it's a I don't know. I'm looking forward to a certain degree with some certain qualifiers to go back to the office, just to change some of the factors and work from home. And I do think that different kinds of stressors. Yeah, in the workplace, we had coffee breaks and take breaks, and you could get an ergonomic chair and an ergonomic mouse pad and a standing desk and all this stuff. And it's not as easy to set up your home life the same way it was at work. So there's a whole different bunch of stressors, which I hope can be removed when people go back to the office, but who knows? I think it's a big setback for the workforce, physically, mentally, emotionally, all of the above.
Amber, this is an interesting one for you because you've worked from home and for yourself for many, many years, and you have people that work for you remotely. So how have you always tackled this? And because I know you're very careful and diligent on checking in on people and changing and pivoting to ensure the health and wellness of your employees.
Well, honestly, I would say that it's just constant check-ins and constant reminders that, quite frankly, I'm not one of those people who cares about people being at work set hours. I'm much more interested, I think as many people are, in specific work getting done. So the idea being that I don't care if you don't work till 6 p.m. at night. If everything gets done, I don't care if you move to Costa Rica and work. None of that really matters in this remote world in terms of our business specifically. And so I think it's just those constant reminders and checking in on people, because we used to be able to do a lot of that stuff right in person, and you could kind of tell how someone was feeling. And then, as you guys know, we've really kind of lost all of that. And that's, I think that's the unfortunate part. And the second thing is that, you know, too many people are scheduling calls, and too many of those calls are video calls. And there's lots of data now that points to the same findings, that it's exhausting being on these video calls. It's an intrusion into some people's lives. So I think we only need to have video calls when we need to have them. Maybe introduce yourself, turn off the camera, and just give people a little bit of space and time back. Aaron, what do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I totally agree. A lot of people are obsessed with a shiny new toy that is Zoom or Google or Microsoft's version of the same thing, whichever you may use. And a year in, I'd like to think the bloom has come off that rose, but it hasn't for certain people. I had a weekly Zoom meeting that was switched to a three-way conference call because all three people have iPhones, and iPhones come with three-way conference calling. It's been built in for, I don't know, 5-10 years, maybe more. And one of the people said, wow, we should do this more often. And myself and the other person said, yes, we should do this more often. It's easy. It's accessible. We don't have to screen share every time. I think that too many people are still obsessed with the video calling and obsessed with, and I still think, like you said, you don't care if people do their work at 6 at night or in a different time zone, but some supervisors don't see it that way and need to see the person in front of the camera to believe that they're in the meeting and doing the work.
Well, we'll definitely check out this article on Mashable, and it's referring to this constantly stressed at work. It might actually be changing your personality, as Amber mentioned. What I would say is, obviously, it's not just stress. I think you have to be very mindful and aware of everybody around you and the activities and who you interact with and how you interact with them, because all of those things are having an influence on you and can change your personality for the better or worse. And so just ensure that you understand and acknowledge the intention behind actions, behind decisions, behind interactions with people. in this instance, how you interact, most of the time it's unnecessary to be on video. And then if you feel the need, why? Maybe it's better to call a friend in a safe environment. So just be very more aware, I think, and make better decisions and more mindful decisions as well.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And I think at the end of the day, I do believe that employers do have a responsibility to make sure that people are well and not overwhelmed at work. And it's harder to do with remote work, but there are ways that you can absolutely do this. So let us know what you think. You can find us easily online at Amber Mac and at mbancroft80. And of course, please use the hashtag The Feed.
This is The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, channel 167.